Hi everyone, welcome to this new episode of Guida Galattica per Fisioterapisti podcast. Today I'm really happy to welcome Mel Stewart on the podcast. Hi Mel, how are you doing?
Hi Paolo, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm really excited. It's the first time I've actually joined with Italy in Italian physio, so really looking forward to this.
Oh great, and we're really happy to have you here, as you said. So Mel, as usual, we start our podcast by asking our guests to introduce themselves to our community. So if you could tell us a little bit more about your background, your education, and your professional experience.
Okay, so here I am. I was born in Jamaica and I arrived in the UK when I was 11. I'm married and I have three children and two grandchildren, so I'm a grandmother. Been in physiotherapy a long time. I'm not sure how many black physios there are in Italy, but in the UK, there's still only a few of us. I'm one of 8% of chartered physios in the UK. We're still a minority. All of my secondary school education was in the UK. So although I arrived at 11, I went to secondary school here. And I took an exam, which we have here, which is called the 11 plus, and that decides which school you go to. And I was fortunate enough to pass, and I went to a grammar school, which gave me lots of opportunities. But my parents were working class, you know, we weren't rich. You know, I say we were poor, but we were rich in community. Unlike most of my peers at university who were from middle class, white backgrounds. So I went to Bristol School of Physiotherapy, and then I worked as a junior physio at the QE Hospital, which is probably now one of the largest hospitals in Europe. It wasn't then. I worked for a couple of years and I was promoted to a senior position. And then soon after that, actually, I went into teaching and did teaching with practice. And I continued teaching for a few years. And then the school joined the University of Birmingham. So I then have been in the University of Birmingham for quite a while. After that, I did my master's and then I did my PhD. And I was very fortunate and very proud to receive an MBE, which I, you know, it's an honor to receive from the establishment for my services to physiotherapy.
And so can you explain to our community what?
Yes. Okay. So I'm not going to spend too long on this because I've actually written a blog about this. It's such a complicated area, but it's a member of the British Empire. And they are awards given to people in the community. There are all different levels. And this one was, I was put forward by my colleagues as someone who's contributed a lot to physiotherapy over my lifetime. So it's an honor, but it's tied up with the British establishment. And so, yeah, and just very briefly to summarize my background, I am probably the only black physiotherapist from my age group from somewhere called the Windrush Generation. These are people who left the Caribbean, Jamaica. I don't know if you all know where, you know, little Jamaica is on the map, but it's in the Caribbean. And they left between 1948 and 1971 to come to the UK to provide services. But I'll stop there because I could go on at length. So that's a little bit about me,
Thanks. And we're definitely gonna talk about all these topics during our chat today. The first things that I want to ask you is actually obviously related to the current situation we're in, and I'm obviously referring to the COVID-19 pandemic. Because I know you do a lot of work and you've done a lot of work with old people as well. And so I wanted really to know how you felt as well. On this, one of the things that hurt me the most probably during this pandemic was to hear a lot of people saying, and that happened obviously in the UK where I'm currently, but from other countries as well, I heard the same, of a lot of people saying, oh, we don't have to worry because only old and vulnerable people are going to be affected and they're the only one who's going to die. And obviously it was unfortunately very common to hear that. So I want to have a comment from you on this, and also how did you feel when you heard people saying this?
You know, Paolo, I'm always appalled at the way people value the lives of older people. I'm of the view that your worth is not about your age. Yeah, it's never about age. It's about your competence and the skills and the attributes you have to offer society. And as soon as we begin to put age into the equation, people attach a stereotype. You know, they begin to stereotype people about how old they are. And, you know, they start thinking how someone of a certain age should behave. We must become more aware of how flawed these stereotypes are and how discriminatory they are. Because, yes, you know, we get old. I'm old. I'm 67 years old. I have no problems talking about my age, but I know a lot of people do because they're discriminated against. As soon as you voice your age, people say, oh, my goodness, she can't do this, she can't do that. And this is how you'd expect somebody to behave. Not at all. We have to change that rhetoric. And, you know, yes, we become more vulnerable as we get older, and we are going to die. And a lot of older people have died from COVID. But happily, a lot of older people have also survived. They've not died and they've recovered really well. And clearly, you know, the older we get, the more our immune system becomes compromised. I know that, you know that, the physiotherapy community knows that. But the marker is in how well we're going to survive. It's not because we're old because why are we dying. It's because of our immunity. Lots of old people have strong immunity. So let's get the story right. It's not about age. It's about our level of immunity. And we know that lots of older people have come through COVID successfully. So we need to change the stereotype. Yes, we are going to get old. Yes, we are going to die. Yes, we can't do as many things as we used to do when we were much younger. But you know what? Some 80-year-olds can do a lot more than some 30-year-olds can. So let's take the number out of the equation.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. And also, still on this topic, like working with old people, it was very interesting to see the experiment of the program Old People's Home for 4 years old, where you participated as an expert. So first of all, if you want to tell us, our community, a little bit more about the program and the experiment, and also then how old people benefit from spending time with children and vice versa, of course.
Okay, so this was an amazing project. You know, this is something that wasn't on my radar, but I was approached by Channel 4 TV to look at how we might measure the changes that we can bring about in older people if we introduce young people into their daily lives. And so it was about introducing four-year-olds into a residential home. Now, you and I know that as soon as you put older people and young people together, it lifts their spirits and it creates positive outcomes and positive attitudes. But what hadn't been done was to measure the baseline, where we start and where we finish when we put children and older people together. So my role in this was as a physical therapist with a background in activity. So the sort of activities that we were going to measure were things like strength. Now, we have no one measure for strength. You know, we can measure muscle groups. But what we do know is that from the research, a strong indicator of body strength, general strength, is grip score. So you can measure someone's grip and you can use that. There's a correlation between the grip you have, the strength of your grip, and your body strength. So we used grip strength. We also use trackers. Now, a lot of people now are using, you know, their Fitbits, so they're using all kinds of trackers to see how much activity people do. I've got mine on. I've been walking today.
Maybe we all have.
That I keep my activity levels up. But I say, I'm getting older. So we know that as you get older, you've got to make sure that you keep your muscle strength. So yes, I measured activity levels. We looked at daily activities as well, you know, dressing and undressing. But more importantly, we looked at depression scores, because one of the reasons behind the project was that we know that as people get older, they get lonelier, they become more isolated because their family either move away or older family die and they don't have the same support mechanism around them. So we measured depression scores and we looked at lots of other baseline measurements. And we did that experiment once, and the results were astounding. All of the older people that we measured initially had the high levels of depression. Even though they were in a magnificent home, Brilliant residential home, lovely setting, lots of amenities. They felt lonely because, you know, they had little contact. Some had little contact with family. And when they were in there, they would, you know, go to their rooms or spend time in their rooms. But the children had brought them out and given them a whole sense of new hope. And it was so successful that we repeated it a second time. And in particular, the second time, people were saying to us, but what about the children? What about the children? Did they benefit? And of course they did. The children benefit just as much, if not more so, than the older people. Because what the benefits for the older people were so many, but I'll just list a few. When we looked at what the children did initially, they brought companionship. So the first thing they did, you know, they'd come in every day and they'd hug the older people. Now we can talk about hugging with COVID and all that, but this is pre-COVID. So they were the older people, they just run in and they just, as children do, they just love the hugs. And of course, for older people, some of them would say that the only people who ever touched them was their carers. They didn't have anyone else, you know? So to have a little one hug them and touch them was just amazing. Then also, a lot of them had skills which they had forgotten about. You know, some of them, did a lot of craft work. One of them actually was a speech and language therapist in a previous life. And so, you know, sharing these skills with the children, making things and building things really got them excited. They ate together. Lots of older people eat alone, unless they go to the dining room. You know, they're in their rooms and they eat separately. They had confidence to walk without their walking aids. The children would just drag them and say, come on, let's do this. And they'd forget that they had a walking stick and they'd just go with the little one. So, you know, there was a lot of, the children helped to steer them away from thinking about their pain and their introspection and their inabilities. You know, there is so much. And for the children, their language skills developed. They were experimenting in a new environment. They loved the new learning environment. They were forming new friends. But, you know, in particular, what we were noticing was that the children, age wasn't a factor. We know that from the literature, again, that if you start building relationships with young children, their sense of aging and the perspective they have about older people is quite different. The parents would say that the children, when they went shopping, the children had no hesitation about going up to all the people and starting a conversation, and, you know, as if they were friends. So this sort of early interaction is really good. So much came out of that. You know, and I, as I say, I can go on forever, but one of the light bulb moments, as we call them, you know, I just couldn't believe that this had happened. We had a sports day, which was an eye-opener in itself. You know, to have a sports day in an old people's home was unheard of, but we had the children partner with the older people, and everyone had a partner. So an older person had a four-year-old for a partner, and they had a racing track, and if they had a walker, they'd use their walker. If they were in a wheelchair, they'd go in their wheelchair. If they had walking sticks, they'd go with their walking sticks. But they had a four-year-old with them walking down this track. And one of the four-year-olds and her partner were going down the track, 100-meter track, you know, you get there whichever way you can. Such fun. And they enjoyed it so much. And halfway down the track, this older person just threw away her stick. And I thought, what's going on? She literally threw her stick away. And when she finished the race, of course, I was sort of, you know, I was standing there thinking, oh my goodness. What's going to happen? I went over to her and I said, why did you throw away your stick? You know what she said? She said it was getting in the way. She was so excited about racing and winning the race with her little four-year-old, she'd forgotten that her leg was a problem. So it's so exciting. Lots of positive outcomes. And that experiment has been repeated in places like Australia. And it's been going on for a number of years. It's just that people have never measured the effect and how wonderful it is to keep the generations connected and the mutual benefit that we can bring to both sides.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And then the next question, like following this, and you mentioned your expertise in obviously exercise, and we mentioned aging well and the benefits. And so obviously we know that a healthy and active lifestyle is key for living and aging well. But What do you think is the role of physiotherapists in promoting this? And also, if you can give us some like practical examples of things that we can do in our daily life to help promoting this.
Okay. You know what I'd say? Practice what you preach. Practice what you preach. And I guess this is where I'm coming from. As I said, I'm 67, right? And I have always done some exercise, but I'm healthier now in my older age than I was when I was 20, 30, because I've just been practicing what I preach, just saying, well, if you're saying it works, do it. And so, you know, I classify myself as an older adult. And I think a good starting point is to begin with ourselves and to investigate what makes people tick. Right? You can't impose what works for you for other people, right? And so what I would say is that, you know, I know that as I age, there's something called sarcopenia. You know, I'm going to lose muscle mass. That's just how it is. If I have that knowledge and I know I can do something about it, then why aren't we doing something about it? So I start with myself. And so I do regular park runs, and park runs around the world, yeah? And every Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, I'm there. And I'm proud to say that I usually win my category.
Oh, that's great.
And that keeps me really active, gets me out on a Saturday morning. And from the park run, I've done a 10K, I've been doing 10Ks. So I'm running more. I even won the 10K for my category in Birmingham as well. So I think start with yourself. That inspires others, and it's inspired so many people, some of the older men in my department who sees me running and say, can't let Mel beat them. And they've started running. So it rubs off on other people. So that's the first thing I'd say. Think about what you're doing and see this example you're setting. I know we can't all be runners. We can't all be, you know, super duper exercisers. But if we're saying this works, we've got to show people how it works. So the template that we usually think about is thinking about our diet and our exercise, our physical activity. And the two go hand in hand. And because we are physical therapists, then I think we need to think more about the physical side. But at the same time, we can't ignore diet. But think about how difficult it is for people to change. Do not assume that people can just start from the couch one day and, you know, be fit the next. So we have to tune in to individuals and see what it is that motivates them. What it is that wants them to do. Not everybody wants to exercise. They have to have a reason. Now, my background is one from the Caribbean, as I've said, and strokes are very common. Diabetes and strokes are very common in our community, and hypertension. Everyone in my family, all the older members in my family has hypertension, or diabetes, not so much, but strokes and hypertension. And here I am at 67, you know, I could see this coming to me too. Was it a genetic thing, or was it just a lifestyle thing, or is it a diet? I didn't know, but if I could do something about it, I was going to do something about it. So I decided I would look at my diet, I'd look at my exercise, physical, and touch wood, and I'm touching wood, I'm healthy. You know, I'm so lucky. I think I'm really lucky because I don't have any comorbidities, and I'll try and keep it that way. Who knows what tomorrow holds? But if we can do something about it, let's do something about it. So let's see if we can tap into what motivates people. Find what it is that gets people up in the morning, gets them achieving the goals they want. Now, some people don't want to exercise. They don't want to do physical activity. If they don't want to do physical activity, we then have the conversations about the importance of lifestyles and why we need to look at what we do as we get older. So even though we might not want to be running a marathon, might not want to be doing a park run, there are things we can walk. Everybody enjoys dancing, you know, do the things that you like. I love dancing too. So find the things that gets you going. And I think we all need to give someone exercises that they can identify with. And when we treat people, I see I see a lot of people who tell me that physios give them exercises and send them away with them to do. That's what we do. We give people exercises to do. Do they do them? No. Yeah. A lot of people feel some do because they're motivated to do it. Others aren't. And people say that's why they get a personal trainer. you know, people get personal trainers because that keeps them going. It helps them motivate. And some people might need that. But give people exercises that they, like the park run, I find that satisfying. I can meet people, we have a chat, we have a coffee afterwards, we look at our goals together, but that's not going to motivate many people, yeah? Climbing the stairs 10 times a day? Possibly. Gardening? Why not? Hoovering? Whatever. But all I'm saying is that diet and activity go hand in hand. As physios, we owe it to the public to make sure we give them the benefits of our experience and insight.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said something I completely agree with. I think I've had in the past so many patients coming and say, oh, yeah, I've been to the doctor and he said I should run or I should swim. Or I'm like, well, it's not someone else's decision what you have to do. Just do something that you enjoy. As long as you exercise and you keep active, then it doesn't matter what you do.
I agree wholeheartedly. Do the things that gives you fun and excitement. And you know, you'll do it. You'll keep doing it and make it a habit then.
Absolutely. And then I want to just change a little bit topics, and when we go back to what you said, to the minorities topic that you touched a little bit on before. And in particular, talk about like minorities integration. Obviously, I think 2020 will be remembered, obviously, for COVID pandemic, but also will definitely be remembered for the Black Lives Matter movement across the world. I want to ask you if you've seen things changing in our society in the last few decades or last few years, and I hope it's positively, if it's a positive change. And also, then later I want to also talk about our profession. As you mentioned, only 8% of physios in the UK are from Black minorities, so it'd be interesting to have a little bit more from you on that as well.
Okay. Obviously a topic close to my heart. Change is happening, but it's not happening quickly enough. That's the first thing I would say. 50 years ago, and I can talk about 50 years ago because I'm old enough to talk about 50 years ago, some of the things that happened then are happening now. But fortunately, some of them are not. But racism is still a major issue. And it continues because there are not sufficient penalties. People do not care enough and the penalties aren't great enough. You'd probably know that a week ago, the FA and a lot of other sporting bodies decided they'd boycott social media. They boycotted Facebook, boycotted Twitter, and Instagram. I did the same. Why? Is it going to make much of a difference? Not a lot. I don't think it will. But I was making a statement. I was saying it's not good enough to sit there and not call out racism when you see it. A lot of the footballers, as you know, the Black footballers, are abused time and time again, and enough is enough. And I think that's where that was coming from. So I stand hand in hand with what's going on. In terms of making sure that we hold the social media to account, because they can do more than they're doing. So I did not use social media for the whole of the bank holiday weekend. As I say, is it going to make much of a difference? Who knows? Social media companies benefit from the profits and they care less about the people who are being harmed. I know that access to education and professional opportunities continue to be denied to many people because of racism. I see it. I've experienced it. I'm often asked how I can say that when I've had a successful career. I've been fortunate. Yes, I have had a successful career. But what I would say is I measure it against where I would have been if I'd been given all the opportunities that had been bypassed me, I've seen colleagues get opportunities which were never on the agenda for me. It is often the case that on paper, Black individuals are equally qualified or more qualified than their white counterparts, but they're passed over for promotion. I've seen that too, I've witnessed it. Just talk to people, Black people, people of color, brown, whatever you want to call them. I call myself Black and I identify as Black. Some people identify as brown, some people identify by their country of origin. I have no problems being identified as Black. I'm Black, British, African Caribbean. Black individuals, black students enter higher education with similar grades to white students, and they leave with lower classification of a degree. What is going on? You know, you have to ask yourself, if they're coming in with the same grades, why are they leaving with a lesser classification? Black staff in universities make up a greater proportion of the lower grades. We have, 21,000 professors in the UK, in the UK, and only 0.7% of professors are black. I'm an ambassador for one of the schemes which is trying to help black students through university to help to fund them. It's called the Cowrie Foundation. If anyone's interested in looking it up, it's C-O-W-R-I-E Foundation, where we are seeking to literally support black students financially through higher education because we know that they're discriminated against. We have a long way to go in this society. We're in a society where black children make up the minority numbers in the population, but they form the majority in the criminal justice system. You know, they are stopped and searched, goodness knows how much more often than their white counterparts. They form the bulk of the criminal youth system. Why? It's not because they're born criminals. Society has a lot to answer for. You know, we all the stop and searches, all the imprisonments which are escalated in the black community, there's the underlying issue, as far as I'm concerned, is based on racism. I talked about the MBE, and I'll just talk about it here, because the MBE says you're a member of the British Empire. I don't think many people in Italy will be aware of the slave trade. Perhaps it's not close to their heart, but within within the Caribbean, there are lots of African people who were taken forcibly from Africa to work in the Caribbean and the sugar plantations, etc. So there is a lot of enslavement of black people. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that was part of the British Empire structure. And it meant that, you know, the British were benefactors of Caribbean slave enslavement. So when I was awarded the MBE, and a lot of people who get these accolades have this conflict, I had to think very hard, am I going to accept it? It came from the Queen, you know, it originally came from the Queen, but it's your profession who's holding you up and saying, yes, we are proud of what you've done, Mel. But at the end of the day, I went to Buckingham Palace to receive this accolade. And if you want to read more about that, I've got a website, and I've written a piece, because at the end of the day, I decided to accept because it was about my profession. It's about my colleagues honouring me. It wasn't about the Queen so much. You know, yes, I did go to Buckingham Palace. It wasn't about the history of what had happened in the Caribbean. It's about physiotherapy. And I thought there was more to be gained from talking about physiotherapy than not getting it. So the piece I wrote was calling Reconciling Honour with the Atrocities of Empire. So if anybody wants to read that, that's on my site.
Yeah, definitely add the link to the post.
Yeah, there's lots of things to read about the background in terms of racism. So yes, racism is all around us. What I would say to physios in Italy, if you don't know any black physios, find one and talk to them. I'm happy to talk to any Italian physio who wants to communicate with me, because I think even here, where we have diverse populations, and I think probably more diverse than Italy, I'm not sure. Certainly, in terms of the professions working in the hospitals, we have a very diverse group of people. The depth and the harm created by racism can only be understood when you talk to people who have experienced it and listen to what they say. Obviously, everybody has a different story to tell. But unfortunately, it's usually a negative one, but we're getting there slowly and slowly. We are chipping away, but lots more work to be done, lots more work to be done. So yeah, we can have those conversations. I can talk about racism the rest of my life, but we won't because yeah. It's a part and parcel of where I'm coming from, where I am today, and probably where I will be in the future.
Yeah, thanks for sharing this. Very interesting. And I think personally, what I found is you used to read about these things on books, and you think it's back in the days and ages ago. But then now, especially like speaking to colleagues or some more kids and black kids, and they're still experiencing this right now. And when you said about police searching more black people compared to the white counterpart, it's something that I've witnessed as well. And I unfortunately, like I thought it was not possible. Now there was a thing that was old or back in the days, but yeah, it's really hard to think that still now there's so much racism.
And I guess, you know, why it's so pertinent at this moment in time. Everybody saw the George Floyd incident. You know, obviously it cuts to the core. It's painful for someone like me, because it's just the tip of an iceberg. All the atrocities that had been committed before George Floyd weren't captured, or even when they were captured, they were thrown out, you know? So when the Black Lives Matter movement started, that, I guess, was just because a lot of, even though we'd had evidence like that before and it was discarded, there was no way. You know, when we're sitting there waiting for the outcome of the court case, could they have let him off again as they did in the past? You know, that just shows how ridiculous, what a monstrosity, you know, racism is, that they could actually contemplate letting off this police. Anyway, yeah, that's the nature of the beast.
Well, we'll just go to our last question for today, and now we'll try to bring a bit of hope and talk about the future.
There's lots. I'm an optimist. I'm a positive.
Yeah. Perfect. My last question is, obviously, what advice would you give to young colleagues who are now graduating?
Okay, young and old. I use the term old in a positive way.
Yeah.
I would say to both young colleagues and older colleagues, physiotherapy was and will always be a relevant profession in helping people to maximize their physical potential. Isn't it a wonderful career? I just think it's, you know, we move, and that's why physiotherapy will always be needed. Yeah, we can maximize people's potential. It brings quality to their movement and recovery in people's lives. Yeah, that is what we do. Rehabilitation and health promotion will always be relevant. And the options to practice are unlimited. Yeah, so no matter where we are in the world, as long as they're human beings moving, we're not going to be out of work. I prefer not to use the term dinosaurs. As you know, I think some people say, you know, there's some people who will never change. And I won't use that term, because it suggests people choose to be stuck in the past. But I think they aren't. I think physios will always choose the best evidence if they can find it, and will always try to bring out the best in people, because that's what we do. We just have to make sure we remain excited about our profession and encouraging to all practitioners at all levels. So yeah, the future looks bright. I think physiotherapy, we have so much to do, so much on tap potential. Everyone, all young and old physios, have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, totally agree. Thanks for the great advice. Mel, just before we close our podcast, for people who are interested in having a chat with you or know more about your work and read your blog articles, can you give us some social media or contact details, your website as well?
Okay, right. I might need a translation from the Italians. So I'll probably have to use Google Translator or something. But yes, I have a website, and it's melrosestewart.com. So that's my name, just .com, melrosestewart.com. And I also am on social media, so at Melrose Stewart One. Yes. In fact, if you type in Melrose Stewart, I have a very unusual name. Believe it or not, it's Scottish. That's part of the slave trade again, but it's a conversation for another day.
Yeah.
So if you type in Melrose Stewart into Google, there I am.
Perfect.
Okay.
Easy enough. Great. Thanks again, Mel. Thanks for your time and for sharing all your experience and a lot of topics that unfortunately we don't cover and we don't talk enough about.
But thank you so much. You know, it's such an opportunity to share our practices with colleagues around the world. So I hope this is the start of wider podcasts around the world.
Yeah, I hope so. And thanks again. And thanks, everyone, for being with us. And we'll see you soon for our next episode. Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye-bye.